Okay. Let's move on to applications. Last two quotes. A chamsin, this is a person who purchases things from the owner against his will, even though he pays for the items. So a chamsin is considered to be in violation of a rabbinic level of theft, and he's invalid as a witness. So we should just appreciate that when we're talking about losach mode, don't covet, it's not just a nice ethical thing that we don't want people to desire other people's things and constantly be judging them and maybe even giving them an ayin hara, an evil eye. Where did you come to own that house? That house is the biggest and the best and it should belong to me. But it actually has legal ramifications. A person would become invalid as a witness if he practiced such behavior. And finally, number 12, and this is a bit of a brain teaser. The Chafetz Chaim writes that the pressure that a groom, that a chassan, puts on his father-in-law to give items that were not included in the original negotiation is a violation of losachmot. Now pause there before we go on to the next paragraph. If the item would still be in negotiation during the original discussion, that's not losachmot. That's a business deal. I would like to arrange to marry your daughter. We're discussing how rent is going to be paid for the first month. Who's going to put up the security deposit on our apartment? Who's going to pay for the linen, the furniture, whatever? That's all open negotiation. I'm not being jealous of the money in his bank account and asking him for his money. That's a deal that we're orchestrating. But after we agree to the deal and the prospective son-in-law comes back to his father-in-law and says, Dad, it was nice of you to buy us a house. And it was nice of you to pay for all the furniture. But I'd like you, please, pretty please with a cherry on top, to buy us a car also. Says the Chafetz Chaim, yikes, you might be in violation of coveting your father-in-law's money or asking him for the extra car that's sitting in his driveway that no one's using anyway. Dad, that extra car, you don't mind giving it to me as a gift. Is he allowed to do that?
He said he could ask for a gift.
Good. Let's look at the next paragraph. You're on the ball. This can be analyzed. It's not such a simple ruling. Because some maintain that pressuring for a gift is not losachmot. Because the pressure of asking for a gift is not significant and the person is able to refuse. That's what you pointed out from what we discussed before. Right? I'll ask you just as an aside, does that apply to this case? Some of us pointed out that it's not so simple, because if your son-in-law is asking you with a good wink, that car that's sitting in your driveway that no one's using anyway, can I have it? And the father-in-law says, no. I intend to sell it, I intend to junk it, I intend to let it sit there, it's mine. And he goes to his mother-in-law. Can you tell Dad to give us the car? Come on. You're going to wait till it rusts.
Well, then that's pressure already.
Good, that's the case of losachmot. The ultimate case of losachmot is that the initial reaction was no. Right? If you want a perfect case of losachmot, this would be it. Okay, so even though it's a gift, but there's an awful lot of pressure that's being put on the guy, even though it's a gift. because it's not so simple to refuse the kids a gift after you bought them the house and the furniture and everything else. Would you come to refuse me a junk car? However, here the chassan will accept to take care of the man's daughter in the future. So it's still like part of a deal. So it may have the status of paying for the item requested, which is considered significant pressure. Your son-in-law, your daughter, now the wife is in on the deal, and everyone's putting pressure on. So one could argue with the Chafetz Chaim's ruling and say that it's not losach mode, or one can accept the Chafetz Chaim's ruling and say, boy, is it a case of losach mode, even though he's asking for a gift, but there's enormous pressure. Now, the problem is that people do this. Is there any way to justify the behavior and at least give it some sort of parameters? When would it be acceptable to come back and ask for a gift? And when would it not be acceptable to come back and ask for a gift?
They didn't know they needed a car when they were doing the deal, and then later the need came up. So then they could feel justified in asking.
Good. Take a look at the last paragraph. It is possible that those who allow themselves to apply pressure feel that they aren't in violation of losach mode because they're not pressuring for themselves. They claim, rightly or wrongly, but this is their logic, that the requested gift is for the benefit of the giver so that his daughter should be properly provided for.
That's blackmail.
I, you have to appreciate the argument. The argument is, you provided us with a house. Thank you. You provided us with furniture. Thank you. You obviously just forgot that we need a car. For your own daughter's happiness, if this is the style that you're setting us up, shouldn't you set us up with a car too? I'm not asking for me. I'm asking for something that you yourself want to do and you appear to be wanting to do. So I just got to point it out to you.
Sales technique.
Very good.
And then
you see how delicate it is? You see how he worded it? He didn't word it that it's okay. He says, it's possible that those who do it justify their behavior by arguing that this is what he wants to do anyway. Is he endorsing it? He's not endorsing it. He's opening up a discussion as to how people can go ahead and do this. If it seems the Chafetz Chaim held, and it does seem to be significant pressure that is unwarranted. You don't have that right to ask for something that you're not entitled to.
So he's really not allowed to do this last paragraph.
The simple, well, in practical terms, I think that what we would do is we would phrase it as, is there a way to ask politely or intimate politely that it would be helpful if? And you have to know the dynamic. By certain people, if you intimate politely, that's still a horrendous violation and a pressure. Basically, you opened up the comment that somehow you think I'm responsible to provide you with a car.
You feel guilty.
Even though you didn't put pressure and you didn't speak to the mother-in-law necessarily. But I did what I did, what we agreed, and now you're telling me a car should have been. You walk over to a guy and ask him, I'm not sure if you have a happy marriage or not, but I'd love to be married to your wife. If you don't want, no problem, I'll back off. We all understand that different relationships allow for different openness levels. And we would have to categorize it like that. The young man would have to know if he's even allowed to bring up the topic.
How would he know?
You have to know your people. You have to ask a question. To a rabbinic authority, to know whether you're allowed to bring up the topic, or that topic alone, just opening it up, is already a level of unfair pressure. Yeah.
In my guess, bringing a middleman in the equation will not going to change the outcome. Let's say
it might.
I'm not asking my father-in-law. I'm asking my fiance. Ask her, your father.
Could be.
Or I'm asking non-Jew to go to the Jew to ask to sell whatever. You know. So I'm like.
I could easily see that if the daughter goes to her father and says, "Dad, you did a lot for us. You did well beyond what's expected of any normal parent in our social structure. A house and furniture and..." I'm asking you a question. There's a car. It's an extra car. You're not using it. Mom's not using it. You leave him an out. I know you might have plans for the car. You might want to donate it to a charity. You get a tax deduction. You might have a plan. Might want to junk it. I don't know what you want to do. I'm asking you a question. Is it something that is possible that we can have? He says, "I'd rather not." Oh, okay. Yeah. You have to decide. And that depends on a family dynamic. But to go ahead and put the person under pressure, you're walking straight into a trap that the Chafetz Chaim claims is a clear violation. And even if we want to debate it, you're not on solid turf.
But I also suggested that as a Jew, I go to non-Jew, asking this non-Jew to be an intermediate, a middleman. So I'm not really pressuring another fellow.
The pressure is coming from you.
Still, so
if it comes across like your lawyer will speak to my lawyer in court, then that's pressure.
Okay.
So you have to know what you're able to do. Let me conclude a very cute story we were discussing about having an email forum on the book The Holy Woman. So there's a story in there that this lady writes that her husband gave away to charity a piece of jewelry that was hers. I don't remember if it was earrings or a bracelet, but some of her jewelry was given away to charity. She only wore that item on special occasions, and she didn't notice it was missing for a long time. But about a year later, she noticed. And she got a little frantic. She thought it was stolen. She thought it was misplaced. And her husband says, "Don't worry. It's not missing. It's not stolen. There was a needy person. Came to the door. I didn't have anything else to give them. So I gave away your bracelet." And her reaction was, and that's the name of the book, Holy Woman. Her reaction was, "Ah, we gave it to charity. I'm sure it's being well used. They sold it. They got the money they needed. I'm fine with that." So I was thinking to myself, we're not on that level. If someone wants to be on that level, let them be on that level. But we're not on that level. To take something of mine, give it to someone else without my permission, and my reaction should be, as long as it's being put to a good use, I'm fine. I don't get a responsive chord on that. But how many steps are we away from that ideal? What happens if the item truly does belong to someone else? Can I rejoice that it's being put to good use? If it really is theirs, can I rejoice?
Was mine and now theirs?
No. I'm going two extremes. I'm highlighting a tremendous distinction. She was able to have her item, given to someone else, and she was able to rejoice. To be okay with that. I'm asking a different question on the topic of jealousy and coveting and everything else. How many steps removed are we from that description of a holy woman? Can we, at the very least, see that someone else has their own bracelet that they earned with their own hard work and their own home and their own flower bed? Am I able to say the words, "It is theirs, it was theirs, I hope they continue to enjoy it, it's being put to good use, it doesn't infringe on me at all"? Can I rejoice in someone else's joy? I'm just highlighting how little the Torah is asking of us. Again, if you approach it like we mentioned from the secular vantage point, we have a lot to learn. Because all the vices of society could play themselves in when I'm jealous. Take the extreme. Holy woman! A person who's even able to rejoice when their own item was given away for a good cause. And then you realize how little Hashem is really asking of us. If I gave it to someone else, don't be jealous. Don't try to get it away.
Couldn't she feel that her husband didn't respect her by not asking?
So that's why it's in a book called Holy Woman. That's why it needs that title to such a book. Because according to normal legal relationships, a husband cannot take his wife's jewelry and give it away without her permission. You're not allowed to do that. They had, as husband and wife, a very unique relationship. And to him, not to have what to give at the front door for charity, to turn someone away, that was their level of relationship. I'm not touching it. That's in a book called Holy Woman, and they should, you know, they should have a blessed world to come. But for us, we're not even being asked that. But at least what Hashem did give to someone else, let them live and be well. Okay, I hope that such a session, the week of Tisha B'Av, should be a good merit and a good perspective into personal relationships. And everyone should have a wonderful week.